also contribute in a lot of ways to the station. There's rummage sales and different charities and concerts and things. And if you like this kind of broadcasting, contribute. And if you don't like it, turn it off. That's what I told somebody who complained about it. He has 24 hours a day, just turn it off for 1 hour, and he has his freedom and we have ours. So give the station what you can. They appreciate it, and it's badly needed. And maybe we can fix the stereo monitor and take some calls, okay? Now release the pause. I'm going to get this one of these days. I do pretty good. I'll say again, this is August 22nd, 1983, side two of If You Tape, Record It, or Broadcast. It's Mae Brussel, KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. Now, Mark Rich, as I said a minute ago, is symbolic of the kind of shenanigans of huge money, mystery money, unnamed places, unnamed sources, secret papers. He agreed after a year and a half that he would turn over his papers and cooperate with the government. And on August the 9th, a day later, he paid a fine because he was withholding the government to the judge of $1.25 million. He has a lot of money, so I'm sure it doesn't hurt him, but it's beginning to hurt him with customers right now, that he would turn over papers important to the courts to see if he had taken $20 million or more tax money out of this country and put somewhere in another bank. He did agree to turn over the papers, and 2 days later, after he told the judge he would, and it was in all the newspapers, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, they're following it closely now. 2 days after that, I mentioned last week, he was seized at the airport with a woman who was flying to Zug, Switzerland. I don't even know where Zug, Z-U-G, is. In Switzerland, with two trunks of papers that the federal government had been wanting for a year and a half, and that he promised 2 days before. This is a man of his honor. I mean, these are real sleazy operators, all of them, whether it's David Graeber or Mark Rich or these Mr. Charles Bluedorn or Richard Nixon, these big operators making piles of money, these multinationals. Henry Kissinger's working for them, making their profits and then being put on the board of their corporations. He promised 2 days later he would turn over the money, okay? Now, he wanted to sell all of a sudden. He's caught at the airport. He's caught with the goods, his fingers in the cookie jar, and the next article is in the L.A. Times, August the 12th, 1983. Rich stymied by the court in the pursuit of Fox sale. It's hurting Fox Studio. The judge threatens to tie up all of his American money. He wants to sell 50% of Fox Studio. It's hard to do that on a few hours' notice. And he's going to do that. His papers have been seized and in the United States, the ones that he was taking out of the country. Now, after he puts up an offer to sell Fox Studio, August 15th, the paper from the Wall Street Journal, Switzerland enters the Mark Rich case and seizes important documents. Now, over in Switzerland, he has papers. He's from Belgium and big holdings in the Netherlands Antilles. The Swiss government goes into his office and takes the papers that the United States government wants. I mean, isn't that really nice? Instead of saying neutral, these are our so-called allies that we wheel and deal with. And it's just a measly like $20 million in tax dollars, but it isn't that. It's Henry Kissinger, and it's Gerald Ford, and it's the whole administration that raised the oil prices in the Middle East for the Shah and for these various people for Chase Manhattan. And the Swiss, same Swiss government that let Licio Gelli walk out of that tight security prison last week, the government goes in and seizes the important documents. Now, the judge is probably one of the most honest judges in America, Judge Sand, federal judge. I just can't believe there's such a man, S-A-N-D. You have to remember that name, and that's pretty easy to remember. He's absolutely furious. I've never known a judge who showed any indignation with these crooks. And he threatened to close all the Mark Rich United States operations. There's 30 or more, including the Chase Manhattan, and he closed them all up. He's furious at what happened. And he said the Swiss government came in and took the golden nuggets. Now, that's a new expression. I'm so tired of hearing the tip of the iceberg is showing. He said they took the golden nuggets that we've wanted a year and a half of besides flying papers out. What was over there, they took. Then there's another Washington Post story. Mark Rich agrees to turn over the documents already. And this story has to do with how he made his oil profit. This was dated August the 9th, about how he made his $50 million. It doesn't tell you how he made it, But from 1974 to 1976, he made $50 million. And 1974 is when Michael Sindona lost $45 million and more from his Italian banks. And I'm wondering if there was a transfer from a bank in New York City that belongs to Americans that went bankrupt that makes Mr. Mark Rich have a corporation over in Switzerland and in the United States and the Netherlands, Antilles. These missing millions, one is missing $17 million here and another has $17 million there. And these figures seem to overlay or sound similar if you can go by the figures. So when Michael Sindona is missing his and the bank goes under, those $45 million, all of a sudden this guy shows up with $50 million in 2 years. That would be impossible unless it's illegal or narcotics or some kind of a ripoff if the oil prices were engineered by H. Kissinger and Chase Manhattan. And he has his money tied up among other banks, Chase Manhattan. The New York Times, August 18th, has Mark Rich's International Business Network. I suggest you get that paper if you're interested in this subject because there's two articles in the section of the New York Times, two different ones, August the 18th. One is called Mark Rich, Empire Builder, Success Story Amid Secrecy, about his brilliance for business coups. Well, Henry Kissinger is the National Security Council and Secretary of State and on the board of 20th Century Fox's William Rogers from the entire narcotic, the Bahamas and the offshore, the Resorts International and Henry Kissinger, knowing where all the bodies are buried and the narcotics are coming in and the oil profits are, what do you need besides the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and the National Security Council as your best friends? And the President of the United States, Jerry Ford, who he puts on the board of his company of 20th Century Fox, those three guys know everything. And Anna Chenault is on the board, and Grace Kelly. They knew everything, Mr. Rogers and Ford and Kissinger. So how did he make his money? Obviously, and then he rewards the buddies and puts them on the board. Now, there's also a very good chart in the New York Times of the holdings of Mark Rich. And this is important. It tells about his Swiss concerns. One in Zug, Switzerland, called Mark Rich & Company AG, with five subsidiaries, two in Switzerland, Mark Rich & Company and Seymour Trading, and three in Panama. Again, the Panama banks, the Vatican, Paul Marcinkus, Jonestown, Michael Sindona, the whole gang. There's many banks in Panama, but he has the Hyams Consultant, the Rescor Incorporated, R-E-S-C-O-R, and the Liquin Resources, L-I-Q-U-E-I-N. Five subsidiaries of Mark Rich & Company. In the United States, he has Mark Rich and Company, formed in 1974, the year when the big bucks, he starts going to business, but closed, he changed the name when the judge wanted the papers. As I mentioned last week, he changed the name of the corporation. He's got Mark Rich and Company Export that's suspended in 1980 and Guam Oil and Refining Company. Then in the Netherlands, Antilles, he has Richco, NV Incorporated, formed in 1980 with nine subsidiaries, one in Great Britain, three in Switzerland, three in the United States, and two major ones in the Netherlands Antilles. I charted those countries out and how they interconnect, and that's in the New York Times, if it interests you. The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times are filled with this, and because he's so close to Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford and John DeLorean, who on the board of Chris Kraft bought 20%, again, I repeat, of 20th Century Fox, part of that pie, these guys' names aren't going to go away for a long time. Now, getting back a little bit now on Klaus Barbie, we have some more time. I would like to do an hour on Barbie, but I'll do some of that this evening. There was, in addition to the story of Senator Javits and how that broke, there was an article, again, I mentioned New Solidarity, because August the 8th, 1983, on the lawyer representing Klaus Barbie. And he has such an interesting biography. I'd love to take these people and see where they were at certain times and certain years. And that's the one thing this organization has that the LA Times, the Associated Press, United Press, none of them have chronologies until somebody dies. And they have the obituary in every movie they made and every song they wrote. But they wait till they die to tell every corporation they were on, every board. But the New Solidarity to Give Credit does have information that the years are consistent. And there was a story about the attorney for Klaus Barbie who wants him out of jail. They say his life is threatened in jail, and they want him out on the streets. This is San Francisco Examiner, Wednesday, August 17th. His attorney is Jacques Verges, V-E-R-G-E-S. He says his client might be murdered in jail for fear he would reveal the collaboration of French officials with the Nazis during World War II. He wants him out, and the judge says no. The Lyon judge says, no, I don't take your petition. Mr. Verg, your client stays in. And New Solidarity did a story on the lawyer for Gestapo Chief Klaus Barbie. A little background on Jacques Verg. He's sort of like the Melvin Belli or Percy Foreman or Leon Jaworski of the French government, I suppose. Here's the biography of just some missing years, of course. Jacques Verg was born in Thailand. His mother is Vietnamese. His father is French. They moved to the French island of La Reunion in the Indian Ocean. He was born there in 1924. The years pass. In 1941, he is working as an anti-colonialist in Paris. He's fighting the French and their colonies. He's 17 years old in 1941, and he's a student with Pol Pot, the famous horrible person from Cambodia, the torturer, the dictator. He's the associate of Pol Pot as a young student in Paris in 1941. Then there's some missing years that aren't listed here, and he goes from Paris to Prague, Czechoslovakia, where he works with the International Student Union, part of the Soviet Union, which reminds me of Lee Harvey Oswald's trip to Minsk, Russia, where he picks up Marina Oswald from Minsk, Russia. And he works with the International Student Relief Fund, and he also is given assistance by them. He's part of that from 1950 to 51. He's there. The student with Pol Pot is lapsed. They don't have that information. He returns to Paris, where he no longer is a communist any more than Lee Harvey Oswald was when he returned from the Soviet Union, and was meeting with George de Morenschild, wanted as a Nazi war criminal, a man with ties to the Defense Department, the CIA, the FBI, and so forth. All of a sudden, this Mr. Jacques Verges is no longer a communist, you might guess. 1954, and he goes to law school in Paris. He resumes law school 1954 to 1956. He's in law school and lives in Paris in 1956, and then he begins defending the FLN, that's the Algerian National Liberation Front, that wanted their freedom against France. He's over there, and he represents Chieftain Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D, Ben Bella. Any of you that know the story of Algeria know about Ben Bella, who took over and made Algeria a country, took it away from the French, and then when Jacques Verg leaves that country, his friend is kicked out. He's no longer in. Now, during this time, he's close to François Genoud, G-E-N-O-U-D, the head of the Nazi International, who was Bella's protector, and he was living over there. July 5th, 1962, this is 1 year before the Kennedy assassination, Algeria declares its independence. Jacques Verg leaves Algeria and goes to Damascus and takes on an Islamic name. He becomes Jacques Mansour, M-A-N-S-O-U-R, and he marries somebody from the FLN, a bomb squad person, and he's involved with operations in Angola. And Ben Bella has now landed in Algeria with a mysterious plane crash in 1963 and is removed from the government. The government is taken over by a military dictatorship in 1964, and Ben Bella is in isolation for 14 years. So he was his friend and buddy. He was with Pol Pot and continues then to live with Pol Pot, who's exiled, who's part of the Cambodian massacre. And whether he betrayed Ben Bella and turned him over to the future military dictatorship, we don't know, but he has a sleazy background in espionage and counter-espionage. Then Jacques Verges, V-E-R-G-E-S, goes to Israel. That's figures. He defends a Jordanian terrorist by the name of Hedzi, I can't pronounce it, let's spell it, H-E-D-J-A-Z-I. Okay, Jordanian terrorist, and then he also defends Moshe Samshambe, whose plane was forced out of Algeria, and he goes to the Arab bloc, and he goes back to Israel in 1969 and works for members of George Habash's Popular Front, the Liberation of Palestine. Now, that gets interesting. The lawyer for Klaus Barbie working for George Habash's members, because I mentioned many times, if you don't have the broadcast that I've done on Robert Byron Watson, you can get those. The links from Georgia to George Habash in Lebanon and with the PLO and his brother in Chile, part of Murder Incorporated that dies in, again, right up to Western Goals and the Los Angeles Police Department today. He went working with as a defense lawyer for three members of George Habash's Popular Front. And I've made the allegations that I believe Mark David Chapman, when he went to Lebanon, worked with Habash because the people from DeKalb County, where he came from, are directly funded by drugs, weapons, and syndicate and narcotics traffic. So if a person defending Klaus Barbie is working in 1969 with Habash, by 1970, Ronald Reagan he's the governor of California. Richard Nixon is president. And that's when Klaus Barbie becomes part of parcel, the cocaine king and the trafficking down in Bolivia and South America. Cocaine, heroin, hashish is open sesame when Nixon is finally in. It's the Nazis and the mafia. And by 69, the Jacques Berg is working for Habash, and he may have made the introductions to the Klaus Barbie down there, because I've mentioned before that during this time period, the French connections were cut off, the processing in Marseille, and there were arrests and scandals about the drug connection. So instead of processing, they shipped it down to Colombia and Bolivia, and this was the territory of the death squads and the terrorists that I mentioned before. Now, he was in Israel for 3 months defending these various terrorists up till 1970, and in 1972, he was seen in Paris for a short while, and then there was no trace of him from 1972 to 1978. And according to this story, there are allegations that he was living with Cambodia's dictator, Pol Pot. When he was kicked out of Cambodia, this notorious person, then Jacques Berg was with him. Well, you know the cocaine and heroin connections of the drug connections of Cambodia and these people. So it would be logical that the attorney for Klaus Barbie that steps in at this point has touched all these bases, besides the Vietnamese mother and the background of Southeast Asia and Pol Pot and George Habash in the Middle East. Ben Bella was released in 1979 as a non-person from the prison. He's lucky he wasn't murdered. Most of these people are murdered. His government was just overthrown. And in 1979, Berg, B-E-R-G-S, goes back to Paris to study law again, and he registers with the Paris Bar Association, and his first client's last name was Tsutsumi, T-S-U-T-S-U-M-I, a rich Japanese heiress with French casinos, and his second client was Klaus Croissant, like the piece of pastry, C-R-O-I-S-S-A-N-T, a lawyer for the Biedermannhof, again linked to George Habash and Carlos, and then he defends people who were involved with Carlos the terrorist. Carlos was with Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson and Samuel Cummings up in London. You know, Mr. Cummings, who armed Turple and Wilson and Gaddafi, the brother-in-law of Senator John Tower, the Foreign Relations Committee. Okay, he represented Bruno Briquet, B-R-E-Q-U-E-T, and Magdalena Kopp, K-O-P-P, associates of Carlos. Those are some of the clients of Jacques Berg. He did go to Israel to defend some of the terrorists, the PLO. He was evidently welcome in Israel as a lawyer and went on as an advisor. He was closely associated with Regis Debray. That's never been told, the role that Debray had in the death of Che Guevara. He was supposed to be his best friend. He's close to the government in Paris, strangely enough, at the present time, and there were links of Klaus Barbie to the murder of Che Guevara. Now, this article on Jacques Berg says that he will use the trial like the Nazi Germany, the technique for the Nazi Germans, and turn the defense into an accusation. Now, that's what John DeLorean is doing. He's asking for his papers from the National Security Council, the FBI, the CIA, the State Department, remember Watergate when James McCord had Bernard Fensterwald as attorney and threatened to bring the whole house down with blackmail if they got too involved? And E. Howard Hunt made threats, and William Colby made threats to Howard Baker. I have copies of those threats. So he was linked to George Habash in Beirut, Lebanon, directly linked to Representative Larry McDonald, partner of Roy Cohn and Admiral Moore and Edward Teller. It's not only a drug connection. It's a military connection. It's atomic bomb connections. It's Nazis. And this article on the attorney and the bases he touches is familiar with many of the broadcasts that you've heard me talk about. Now, about the report that came out last week on Klaus Barbie. In March, our President Ronald Reagan ordered William French Smith, we have to find out about the allegations that Klaus Barbie worked for the United States. And I was really surprised at Mr. Ryan. I shouldn't have been surprised. Anyone such as Alan Ryan Jr., who took how many years, you know, since 1945, to let Nazis like Mr. Arturkovich and Mr. Trivia or maybe Walter Dornberg or all the other Nazi war criminals in this country, to let them be here, you must know what part he's playing. But I'm always a little bit shocked. I'm not shock-proof yet. So when he comes out with a presentation of his report, it was identical to Earl Warren, the Chief Justice of the United States, holding up the Warren Report and saying this is the definitive study. There's all kinds of whores. These are political whores. They'll do anything for a price and a job. Maybe they believe what they're doing, but they're liars. And they have to have some oath, just like the House Select Committee. They never went into Raul or Gaver. They don't care at all. They'll spend $6 million, publish a book. They even said at the end of the conclusion, Martin Luther King, there was a conspiracy. But Jesse Jackson's running around not wanting to be president. He hasn't asked who, and he was on the balcony. And so was Andrew Young. So you can't expect much from anybody. I don't care, black, white, left, center, or red. You do your individual responsibility. And Mr. Ryan is a disgrace for the human race, but he's got a lot of company, so it's okay. Now, he came out with a report in various sources you have. I'll quote from them from the Monterey Herald, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and so forth, as much as we have time on his report. And first of all, some quotes I'll give directly from his report, and then I will rebut them, and I'd like to meet him face to face. The report places the blame on Army officers who hired him as a spy. I don't believe that six Army officers hired Klaus Barbie because he happened to know what was going on in certain little towns. He was in Lyon all the time, so he wouldn't know much about the Russians or in Germany where he was located. I believe, and I've said before, and it can be documented over and over again, that by 1943 to 1947, Alan Dulles in Bern, Switzerland, with Hitler's agents and Himmler's agents and SS Karl Wolf in the Vatican, and the top Nazis worked with the international bankers and made a decision that they would use these Nazis when the war was over. Those were six hired guys, and most of them are dead, and the two survivors said they didn't remember the incident. There's a cartoon in the paper of an army man interviewing a fellow whose shirt says Klaus Barbie and his hands are dripping of blood. And he says, the Butcher of Lyon, that's a strange name. He's telling him who he is, and the guy doesn't think that's an unusual name. Now, the report says, and quote, President Reagan was satisfied that the Justice Department had done a thorough job in researching all available information and reaching its conclusion that there was no interagency conspiracy to conceal Barbie from the French. Lie number two. Oh, pie off of this is true. Ronald Reagan was satisfied. That part is true. But the part that they did, there was no interagency, there's a double part here. Okay, part one and two. The fact that to the interagency, it was the OSS. It was the CIC, the Counterintelligence Corps. It was the State Department. It was all of them. It was Navy Intelligence Project Paperclip that brought those monsters here. It was the Air Force. It was an interagency. We used them all over the place. And to say no interagency conspiracy that six Army people and four are dead, I mean, it's absolute insults your intelligence. Third point, quote, Barbie was recruited to report on French intelligence operations in the United States zone of Germany on activities of Romanian ethnic Germans and on Soviet, anti-Soviet activities in the U.S. zone. I don't believe that's what he was doing at all. He was at Oberammergau. He was with Henry Kissinger. He was with Fritz Kramer. I believe they kept him from 1945. Well, they had him from 1947 officially. He was wandering around in amnesia until then. They didn't even have him. They haven't told where he was in 1946, but the French wanted him. He was with the top Nazis that went in, General Patton and General Clay and the whole gang, and William Casey was involved, and Prince Bernhard and the whole hogwash that were at the Battle of the Bulge. They went in there. They went to Hitler's headquarters in his home. They used his staff that I've mentioned on the air, and they decided he would be useful someday down in South America to do what he was doing once Richard Nixon was president, starting after the killing of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Adlai Stevenson and the whole gang. The world is theirs, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and those Nazis. They don't need any vote from Congress or any letters from your congressman. Barbie was trained with them, and he was with them up to the last moment when he was shipped off. He was in the United States with these people. Why would Thomas Dewey, the prosecutor of New York City, who came to fame catching Murder Incorporated, catching Luciano, why would he release a man for Murder Incorporated and send him to Italy to work with the United States Army? Doesn't that tell you that they want the dope running, that the gun running, that criminals are in and the crippled people like those guys that this woman saw on television are out? Of course. Next sentence from the report. After using the Gestapo, Officer Klaus Barbie, for their informant for nearly 4 years in post-war Europe, the U.S. intelligence officials engineered an elaborate obstruction of justice and slipped him out of France, which is now called the Rat Line. That is true that they engineered an elaborate obstruction of justice, but don't think it was made for him. It was made for thousands of them. And the gold and the art from Europe and the banks were emptied. And the Bormann money, Martin Bormann's money, and a lot of it put in the safe accounts of Evita Peron, it was salted away. So by the 1950s, when Evita died, the banks were opened up. In 1950, all of a sudden, these multinationals are making all their money. Okay? So there was absolutely no reason to believe the Rat Line was just for him, and they pride themselves that they did this elaborate thing and sneaked him down because they, at this point, couldn't tell the French where he was. Second, next sentence. The investigation was ordered in March, I said this part before, after widespread reports that Barbie was protected by the U.S. intelligence. It was ordered in March. It was finished in August. Next sentence. The report showed the intelligence officials lied to the office of John McCloy. Here's the big lie. Post-war High Commissioner for Germany, after the French wanted to know about Barbie, and they said they didn't know where he was while he was kept at Army Intelligence Safe House. If you want to know a little more about John Warren Commission McCloy with Alan Dulles on the Warren Commission, get broadcasts that I did 585 and 584, just a background of John McCloy, with Rudolf Hess, with Adolf Hitler, with I.G. Farben, the law office that represented Farben, with his making the decision when the Bulge invasion would take place, his working with top Germans in France, and then France collapsed, retrading with the enemy, the Chase Manhattan Bank, the international banks, the role of McCloy. He's the one who rounded up the Japanese for the concentration camps. He was chairman of Ford Foundation on the board with Henry Ford, who was a major supplier of Adolf Hitler. Imagine how they got around this thing. You saw John McCloy on television, and he had lied to the French himself when he was at the airport. They interviewed him about where Klaus Barbie was, and Ryan comes along and says the army lied to McCloy that he was innocent. If ever there was a guy that had swastikas on two arms and legs, it's John McCloy. Well, our time is up. We only have about 15 seconds, and now it's going to 10. We'll do more on Klaus Barbie because the lies are identical to the way they presented the Warren Commission. It was 20 years ago, so let's see what they tell us today, and maybe you can understand what they did then. In the meantime, this is Mae Bressel. You do your homework, and I'll be back with you next week. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.
The views expressed by Mae Brussel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.